He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
Well, it's Friday, and what did we say on Friday?
TGIF.
TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. We're going to teach that to every New Yorker. That remark must be 100 years old, but thank God it's Friday. We're here with Lydia Serrani, Governor David Patterson, George Venizelos, and George was the what's the exact title, George?
Assistant Director in Charge.
Of the FBI in New York, and you were in charge of Harrisburg and
Harrisburg, Philadelphia, and New York.
Boston, too, wasn't it?
I was an agent in Boston.
Okay. And we had a very sad funeral today. We had former James Kallstrom, former agent in New York, agent in charge in New York. And he handled Flight 800, the TWA flight.
Yeah.
And it's about the 25th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very sad because in the last week or so, that's when he passed away. And Cardinal Dolan at St. Patrick's Day had a beautiful, beautiful funeral. And
yes.
George was there. I was there. And our next guest, we have Commissioner Kelly Wiss. Commissioner, how are you today?
I'm good, John. Good to be with you. I saw you earlier today, of course. And you're obviously at the Jim Kallstrom funeral. Just an outstanding person.
How well did you know Jim Kallstrom?
I'm sorry?
How well did you know Jim Kallstrom?
Oh, I knew Jim Kallstrom pretty well because I was one of the founding members of the Marine Corps Law Enforcement Foundation. And Jim took that ball, this is in the 90s, and ran with it, a lot of other people. The idea was to give resources to the families of fallen police officers or Marines in the event that they were killed in a line of duty. And they've done some great work. They've done it since, I think it was 1993, but I was there at the beginning. And Jim led that effort, but he was an outstanding FBI executive as well. As you said, he led the Flight 800 investigation. And he was a Marine. He was a Marine in Vietnam. He was exposed to Agent Orange, and the VA certified that that was the cause of Jim's death. He had a very difficult time with it. He had to keep going back into the hospital to get blood transfusions. So it was not an easy time for Jim, but he's an outstanding man, and we'll miss him.
From the time he was a Marine and he was in Vietnam, he's been suffering from the side effects of that. I mean,
that's correct.
Wow, that is.
Well, he had some impact on him, I believe, all along.
George Venizelos, you were with the FBI for so many years. Did you work with Jim Kallstrom at all?
I got to know Jim when I came back. When I came back to New York as an executive and. And he was retired. You know, unfortunately for me, I didn't get a chance to work under him. But he was a legend. I heard so much about him. And when I met him for the first time, he was a larger than life figure. He's a tremendous man. He was a tremendous leader. And I got to know him pretty well. You know, cause I took the job he had, the head of the New York office, and he was kind of a mentor. And I would talk to him a lot. We honored him when I was there, and he was one of the best. And today was a great tribute to him. You know,
Cardinal Dolan did a phenomenal job.
Oh, it was great.
And they must have had 2,000 law enforcement people St. Patrick's Cathedral today. And I mean, where do we go from here? I mean, I had him on the show, and we're going to replay on Sunday the last interviews I did with him. And it was very sad. And, you know, what do you say, Ray, you know?
Well, I think it's a good idea to have him back on because Jim Kallstrom was a truth teller. He didn't run away from anything. And he had some outspoken comments that I think are right on target in the last, let's say, 10 years. But he, you know, he knew the business, knew the business of investigations, but also saw some broader issues out there that are affecting the FBI, and he did not hesitate to speak about it. So I think that's a great idea, John, to get some of his former interviews on there.
Governor, did you know him at all?
No, I never actually met him. And by the time I was in office, he had retired.
I'll tell you, at the funeral today, the one touching moment, which you don't see at many funerals, and I've been to a lot, was at the end with the Marine Corps when the Marines opened the flag up, and you had the whole church led by one of the Irish tenors sing God Bless America. It really brought tears to my eyes, and I know there wasn't many dry eyes when that was happening. But again, that shows what the man he was. He was about America. He was about fighting for freedom of this country. He was about protecting this country. And it was appropriate tribute for him.
Yes, absolutely. I understand. Ray Kelly, you were commissioner of New York for a long time, for 12 years. But you also, at one point, you were appointed and you were in charge of Haiti. What happened in Haiti? I mean, there was an assassination of a president. Didn't he have any security guards? Who do you think did it? Well, give the American people an update.
There's an awful lot of questions. The sad reality is that Haiti is a dysfunctional country and has been dysfunctional for most of its history. If you look at it, there's all sorts of revolutions and coups that have taken place in Haiti. Now, the Haitian people are hardworking, they're strong people, but they just can't seem to get the right leadership. You know, Haiti has become, again, unfortunately, a drug transshipment spot, and it has very little business, very little commerce other than the drugs and some agrarian, you know, items, some plants, that sort of thing, coffee and a little of that, but they just cannot seem to get the right leadership going. The technological revolution has really passed them by. It's a sad place. And you say, what happened here? Nobody really knows. I mean, how can you have a security detail protecting the president? And none of the security detail is injured. And yet he was shot 12 times.
That's
20 people did it. I mean, it's a typical Haitian situation. It's going to take us a while to get.
Yeah, he was shot 12 times, and then they gouged his eyes out, and no one does anything. None of the attackers was killed, and none of the, as you said, Commissioner, none of his security team was injured.
His wife was injured.
Right.
His wife was injured.
Right. You know, unfortunately, most things in Haiti that are illegal revolve around drugs and money. And as I said, the transshipment point, and that's why you see people from some of the South American countries that are in Haiti. Chances are they have something to do with the transshipment of drugs that are coming from South America. And not being produced by Haiti, but being shipped from Haiti to other locations. So Haiti has had a very, very rough history. It just can't seem to catch a break. But I would not send U.S. troops there. When I was there in the 90s. We did have U.S. troops. I was there to run the police monitoring system. So I had, you know, several hundred people working for me to monitor the police. I would not do that again. The Haitians have to stand on their own 2 feet. The first thing they did, somebody there would call for U.S. troops. You know, it's not a U.S. possession. You know, we shouldn't be doing that sort of thing. And I'm happy to see that there's no indication that it's going to occur.
Now, you love New York City and like we all do, and we have an election coming up. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I don't know. I think Curtis Sliwa will be a strong opponent. Obviously, one of the disadvantages here to a Republican is the overwhelming disparity between Democrats that are registered and Republicans. But we know that Curtis Lee was a pretty articulate guy. He spent his adult life fighting crime. He knows the subways like the back of his hand, which I think is a real battleground these days to get people back on those trains. So we're going to see. I think it's going to be a pretty robust campaign. I don't think it'll probably kick in until late summer or September. So we're going to have a bit of a hiatus before we see them really going after each other.
But, Governor Patterson, I think you're supporting Eric Adams. Is that true?
I am, but that's not the reason I'm going to say what I'm about to say. The campaign will never kick in. He'll get 37% of the vote, and you can write that down.
All right. Lydia, write it down.
Write it down, 37%.
And let's see, are you betting dinner on it sometime in November?
Oh, I'll bet the whole restaurant.
Oh, wow.
Well, listen, when you have
And by the way, it's not that. By the way, I think Curtis will be better prepared than the other Republican candidates have run recently. One of the reasons that the Democratic primary is
Mike Bloomberg and Rudy Giuliani.
Commissioner. I mean people who ran against a Democrat that was in office. So yeah. I mean that
five of the last seven people elected were Republicans.
Yes, but the demographic of the city is much different than it was then. But what yeah. I would say is he really does know the issues. He can articulate them. Because of his work in radio, every major event that's going on, he's known something about. I think there's a real opportunity for him to, you know, not be sort of the shock jock that he's known as, but a very bright person. I did a radio show with him in 2013 for 8 months, and I really gained a tremendous amount of respect for him.
He's very intelligent. There's nobody that knows New York City as much as Curtis Sliwa. He knows every nook. He knows every cranny. He knows the subway system. And what I'm saying is, look, Curtis is my brother, and I love him. I know Eric Adams a long time. He did a good job for Brooklyn. So, you know, when you have two people in an election, I think it's 50-50. I know the demographics, but to me, it's a flip of the coin because you never know when anybody can step up.
Okay, John, I'll be taking your coin in November. I'm just telling you that.
But I want to ask a question. So Eric Adams, he's currently the Brooklyn Borough President, right? And just last night alone, six people were shot. Like, he can't even control the borough from keeping it safe. So what's to say he's going
to
control the city?
To be fair, Lydia, the borough president has no borough presidents are captains of the community boards. They have no relationship or really that much authority. The police department runs itself, and they don't need the borough president. So they're doing the best they can. But I don't think borough presidents are in that position.
Yeah, but on the one hand, he's saying, oh, yes, I'm going to bring law and order back to the streets. But then on the other, he's saying he's not going to bring in more cops, even though Biden said he can use the federal dollars.
David Patterson, Commissioner Kelly, why, you know, David Dinkins, when he was offered troops, money for more policemen in New York City, he took it. He took it, and Ray Kelly was, I believe, was there and helped turn the city around.
Well, if I remember correctly, Commissioner, you and he, actually, it was your idea when you went to the federal government after the crime bill in 1994. That happened later on. But I'm saying while you were still in office, that you all sought that kind of assistance from the federal government.
Why did Bill de Blasio turn it down?
David Dinkins was a major advocate of Safe Street, Safe City, which resulted in 5,000 more police. And, you know, unfortunately for David Dinkins, it was backloaded in his administration as far as the hires are concerned. Ironically, right after Giuliani was elected, he had this 2,700 police cadet graduation from the police academy. So he benefited from it. But Mayor Dinkins was extremely supportive of Safe Street, Safe City, and it certainly did make a big, big difference in the streets, on the streets of our city.
And why, Governor Patterson, why did speculate. Why did Bill de Blasio turn down the money for more policemen? He's term limited. But he's term limited. He's not going to make it. He's not going to hurt anybody's feelings.
Because Mayor de Blasio's whole political theory is ideological. So he didn't want to take the money for police because he didn't want people that know him to be angry that he increased the police force. If, you know, the city was being bombed and they tried to get more police, I don't think Mayor de Blasio would do anything about it. Eric Adams, on the other hand, is, I'm sorry, Commissioner. Eric Adams, on the other hand, is a reasonable person that you can talk to, and I wouldn't close the door on Eric Adams when I believe he gets elected, perhaps taking another look at that point of view.
Right, because he said he would not add more cops.
He said he wouldn't, and I know he said that, but he wouldn't say that he went, he wouldn't go to the last debate, but somehow he got there, and one day I'll tell you how he got there.
It must have been David Patterson influence.
Something like
somebody
that.
Somebody in the studio.
Commissioner Kelly, Eric Adams worked for you when you were commissioner. Anything you have to say? I mean,
well, look, he's not my candidate, but if in fact he is elected mayor, we got to all get behind him. New York is in dire straits. Drive around, go to Times Square, go to other places in the city. We need strong leadership. So if he gets elected, I'll certainly support him.
I think we all want New York to make a big comeback. The other day we had that big thing in Coney Island, and you know, and it was a beautiful Wednesday night. George,
yeah,
you were there.
It was great. It's great.
We had a big event in Coney Island. Coney Island being the greatest beach in New York, and Brooklyn being a great borough, and we're saying, you know what we said to all Floridians that have moved out? Come on back!
Well, Commissioner, before you go, I just want to tell you that I hope you remember in 1986 when you were the borough commander and you brought all the precinct captains up to my office. And I was a young state senator who, when all of you came there, I thought I was being arrested. But you really explained to me how the crack epidemic was going to be the scourge of the city for the next 5 years, and you turned out to be absolutely right.
Yeah, unfortunately, it hit us like a tidal wave in 1985-86. Murders went up 60% during that period of time.
It sounds like what's happening today.
Almost all driven by crack.
Yeah,
well, right. Drugs again.
Now it's driven by drugs again, mm-hmm. Coming through the Mexican border. And we're going to talk about that later. I think we have a DEA agent in charge, previously retired, George.
Yeah,
and,
Derek Maltz.
Well, Commissioner Kelly, thank you for everything you've done for the city. You continue to speak out and do for the city, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, John. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Commissioner. Great seeing you today.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have Larry Kudlow tell us how the heck is the economy? Where are we going? Let's take a break.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome back. This is John Katzmantides, and with us today is Larry Kudlow, and one of the country's leading economists. And Larry, how is our country doing?
Well, our country's economy is doing great, and even though the market was off today, the stock market's doing great. You've got huge profits. You've got free money. Yeah, there's some temporary inflation, but the market has been seeing through that. The only problem the country's got, if you ask me, is this woke budget resolution from the Democrats, which would raise taxes by, I don't know, $3.5 trillion. Also reports, you know, this crazy idea that we're going to let Europe and foreign countries tax our corporations, give them the power, which is probably unconstitutional. But the market's very uneasy. The market's very uncertain how much of that stuff's going to pass. And rest of the story is great. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if you ask me, this budget resolution is this is a solution in search of a problem.
And the interest rates keep dropping. The bank stocks, even though they had reasonably good earnings, I don't know, how do you interpret it, have been falling. Is it an opportunity for bank stocks? I mean, they are loaded with money. They can buy back all their stock. What say you?
Yeah, well, listen, the banks are loaded with cash. Their profits are very good. the stocks didn't do much the last day or two, but the stocks have been strong. So that's a very good sign. I will say it's interesting that bond rates have been falling. You wouldn't think that if we were worried about inflation. So maybe the inflation is temporary. You know, something really bullish, I'm not sure people paid attention to it, but Taiwan Semiconductor Company, which is the world's largest producer of, you know, kind of general merchandise, commodity-type semiconductors. So they are now amping up their production. I think I read they're going to increase production by 60%. That's going to fill in a lot of the supply shortages, like in the car business, right? You can't produce enough cars. So used car prices have been huge, distorting the CPI. I love it that Taiwan Semiconductor is going to boost their chip production. That's a very bullish thing.
There is a shortages of lumber, the shortages of chips, the shortages of everything. What do you project out over the next 90 days? You feel that that's going to level itself out?
I do. My hunch is you're going to get some lousy inflation numbers for another month or two, but I think we're pretty close to the peak, and that's what the bond market is telling you. And so, you know, take lumber. Lumber prices skyrocketed.
And now they're going down.
Lumber prices have been crashing. Okay, they're down more than 60% in recent weeks. I don't know, it's been about a month. So that's going to make housing a lot cheaper to build. And if some of these local municipalities would fix their regulations, we could build even more housing. But the housing sector's been good. Cheaper lumber is going to really help. You had very good numbers on retail sales today, surprisingly strong sales numbers. Before that, we had very strong manufacturing, industrial production. All that looked very good. So, you know, I think, as usual, the obstacles are coming out of the swamp in Washington, and we don't know how that story is going to turn out. But I think fundamentally, you know, you get a day like today, you lose 300 points. You certainly stick with your guns. And you might think about buying the dip. That's my best advice. Buy the dip. Of course, that's what I always say. Buy the dip.
We got a couple minutes left. What would you like to tell all Americans on the middle of July and the market being seesawing and interest rates are down a little bit? Well, what do you want to tell American people?
You know, keep your chin up. Things are getting – the economy is booming. People going back to work. Rates are low and profits are high and everybody's making money. Businesses are opening left and right. I mean, I think the most interesting story in the last 24, 48 hours, John, is Madam Psaki, Biden's press secretary. You know, she let the cat out of the bag. There is collusion. The Biden White House has been talking to Facebook about what they should allow on their platform or what they should not allow. That's exactly the collusion and censorship that President Trump has been writing about in his op-ed piece that he's brought a lawsuit. And they just kind of leaked it out. I don't think they intended to. They tried to walk it back, and now it looks even worse. And Facebook just came out with a statement saying, well, yeah, we actually have been in touch with the Biden White House about things, for example, discussing COVID and what not to do and what to do and getting vaccines. You know, that's kind of craziness that permeates the swamp. Trump was right. We now got fresh evidence of that. Everybody hates censorship. This is not a country that believes in Big Brother watching over you. We'll leave that to the crazy communists in Cuba and Venezuela and China. America is a different place. So I think, actually, it's the gift that keeps on giving. Finally, the cat's out of the bag. The toothpaste has been squeezed out of the tube, and now we can go to work and stop the censorship by these big media tech companies. That's an important thing, and it broke last night and today.
Larry Kudlow, thank you so much for coming on, and have a great weekend. Hopefully the sun will shine this weekend.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Thank you. This is the Cats at Night, and I'm here with George Venizelos, former assistant to Director of the FBI, Governor David Patterson, Lydia Serrani. And let's take a break. And who are we coming back with?
we are coming back with. And, George, do you want to introduce
him? Yeah, retired DEA Special Agent Derek Maltz.
And I understand he's a good friend of yours, so we're going to let you handle it.
Great.
Okay, let's take a break.
John Katz and the team.
Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Show. I'm Lydia Serrana here with John Katzmatidis and Governor David Patterson. And we also have a special guest in studio, George Venizelos, who is the former FBI agent in charge of New York. And now he's here with us at Red Apple Media Group. And we have a friend of yours on the line with us, right, George?
Yeah, we have retired DEA Special Agent Derek Maltz, who was assistant special agent in charge of the New York Task Force, which is the premier drug task force in the country, right, Derek? And also spent some time in Washington in the Special Operation Division, which is a very prestigious place to work. Derek, how you doing today?
George, how you doing? Great to hear your voice, buddy.
Same here. I mean, one of the issues that we've been looking at this year is the overdoses. Drug overdoses have increased over 30% in 2020. What do you make of that? What do you think is the cause of that?
Okay, George, first of all, I was on national news this morning, and it's a great question. So, number one, we have to change the messaging and the education, because right now, from my experience, the Mexican cartels are the enemy of our children. They've engaged in a continued deadly assault against all the American future generation of kids. That's why we are having record-breaking deaths all over the country, in the cities, in the rural areas. But they have aligned themselves with the Chinese transnational organized criminals who are providing all the precursor chemicals, and they're producing these fentanyl, this powerful, deadly fentanyl in the labs. The problem is, George, that too many people are thinking we're still going through the same opioid crisis and the opioid addiction, which is all legitimate. But what's killing Americans at record levels like we've never seen in the history of the country is what we're now going to call fentanyl poisoning and fentanyl murders, because that's what it is.
Yeah, it's my understanding now that fentanyl, they're putting in even marijuana and everything, and now marijuana is running rampant in this country.
So George, with the marijuana thing, I have yet to confirm that. I've heard the same stories, but it is very much laced inside of cocaine and methamphetamine.
Okay.
And we are seeing extensive deaths in America. And this is what I worry about, George, as a parent, right? Kids will be watching the news and see, like, these counterfeit pills that are coming from Mexico are deadly. So they'll stay away from the pills, and they'll start snorting coke on a Friday night with their buddies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll die because the fentanyl that's in the cocaine now is killing instantly. Remember,
wow.
2 milligrams of fentanyl can kill an adult. And this is the other statistic that nobody wants to talk about. 1 kilogram of fentanyl can kill 500,000 people. And that's
wow.
Based on medical analysis. But, George, because we're talking about fentanyl, keep in mind the Customs and Border Protection released the stats today. So far this year, in 9 months, we have seized 8,507 pounds of fentanyl on the southwest border. And that's a 234% increase from last year's first 9 months. So can you imagine what's getting into the country? That's
crazy.
The scary part for parents and teachers and communities.
Yeah, they're poisoning the country.
And again, we are speaking with retired DEA Special Agent in Charge Derek Maltz. And going to that point, too, there's a new statistic that also came out today that about 190,000 migrants were encountered at the border. 190,000 this last month, which is a record 20-year high. And I firmly believe that while that you got Customs and Border Control trying to catch the migrants and all these people trying to come into the country, you got on the back end, they're sneaking in the fentanyl and all the drugs and the drug trafficking, sex trafficking, you name it.
Right. That's an actual fact. It's called flooding the zone. What the cartels do is they bring the migrants to a certain area. The Border Patrol gets consumed with the migrant care instead of border security. And then they send in the special interest aliens, and they send the other drugs in, like, the open areas. And what's really scary that nobody talks about, by the way, is the gotaways in America. Those are people that just get away. They never get processed. They see them on the camera. They get them on the census. They're in the sand. And there's over 50,000 almost a month that get into America.
We don't know who they are, where they're coming from, what their motives are. So this open border thing is a disaster. I was down in Arizona recently looking at this border, and I was, like, amazed how nice it was. But nothing's connected. Like, the sensors aren't connected. The technology's not connected. And we're paying $500 million to contractors because we didn't finish the job. So it's a complete nightmare. But right now, the cartels are taking total advantage of that, and they're making billions on the migrant smuggling on top of the drug smuggling, and their people are getting into this country and all our cities to be able to move the drugs.
Special Agent Maltz, this is David Paris. I want to ask you a question. What is the mentality of putting fentanyl in the drugs when it kills people? So if you have a clientele as a drug dealer, you're killing your clientele off.
Great question. So let me give you this answer. First of all, the fentanyl distribution in America is, it started with the Chinese, right? The Chinese are a communist country. Part of their unrestricted warfare is to kill their adversary, to destabilize America. So their plan is working brilliantly, and we're too naive to put it together. All the chemicals that come in there, the bulk fentanyl, the cartels are in the business to make money. So you make a great point, and you ask a good question. The problem is that the cartels are not sophisticated chemists. They don't have quality control FDA people that are measuring out the fentanyl. They're trying to get as many addicted people in America to make as much money on their new products. So
wow.
it's a perfect storm. And this is the thing, you know, I get very passionate about this, because I deal with all the families around America, and I'm putting together photo collages every day of all these dead kids, these kids that are dying suddenly that weren't even involved with drugs because their parents are, like, freaking out. They don't understand what is happening, what's different. What's different is everyone's burying the truth. The truth is not some doctor overprescribing. That was 15, 20 years ago that we ignored. You know, Washington Post did this story with 100 billion opioids dumped into America in a nine-year period, and none of the corporate cartels, as I call them, were ever held accountable criminally. But then everybody got addicted, and then all of a sudden the bad guys started trying to take advantage of the addicted population. So right now we have a lot of cleanup to do, and hopefully this new administration will at least recognize this is not a red or blue issue. This is a red, white, and blue issue. This impacts all Americans and all families. So I wish the mainstream media would start putting this message out to the schools and to the teachers, because 95% of the people I know would care about this issue. This is not anything we should be politicizing. It's a bipartisan issue.
Very well stated.
Now, fentanyl, why is there any particular reason that the Mexicans don't realize what's going on and they're sending it in? I mean, and by the way, we're dumbing down America. When the 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 16-year-olds use that stuff, they end up with 10, 15 points less IQ, and maybe they can never get a job.
Well, okay, so good question, but this goes back to the other thing. So let me give you some statistics so you can think about it. The DEA laboratory did a statistical analysis around all these counterfeit pills that they're seizing, and they determined, and this is published report, 26% of their pills that they analyzed have a lethal dose of fentanyl. So from the cartel standpoint, if they kill a quarter of their customers, they're still way ahead of the game because they're building up clientele all over America. They don't care about the people. They care about the billions of dollars that they're going to make every day. And that's something that people don't realize. They, even though they're run in some ways like a corporate Fortune 500 company with the amount of money they make and the way they're set up and compartmentalized, they don't care about people dying or people going into, you know, different hospital, you know, admissions and emergency room admissions. They don't really care. They want to make money, and right now their business is booming because the United States of America is going very soft on the Mexican cartels because we're too busy placating the corrupt politicians in Mexico, and we're not calling that as it is as well. Are you guys aware that...
Why is Senator Schumer advocating a federal marijuana law to allow federal marijuana?
Okay, so let me tell you about that. First of all, I would actually say to Chuck Schumer, if I could see him, why don't you focus on the death and destruction of the kids right now instead of starting to put more dangerous substances in the hands of kids? Because that's who's going to be using this legal marijuana all over America, all right? And the black market is going to boom. And by the way, you guys may not be aware of this. Do your research. You'll find out. The Chinese business guys are building up an entire network of marijuana grow operations in the West Coast. It's flooding the market in the East Coast with very high pure THC. They are always going to be a black market. So you can legalize marijuana all you want, but they're going to undercut it, and the THC is very high, and the states are not going to be getting the taxes that they think. But Chuck Schumer and Congress should be way more responsible. Instead of worrying about giving kids drugs, why don't you clean up the mess you have right now? Because we have 93,000 Americans that died last year, and the numbers are probably way higher because the CDC statistical reporting is horrible. When COVID was happening, we had every day on the TV real-time stats of COVID cases and deaths of COVID. But for the fentanyl crisis, we can't even get the coroners to produce the timely reports. It's unacceptable. It should be, like, really, really debated because they don't even know what the issue is. They think they solved the opioid crisis with slapping some doctors and fining some big pharmaceutical companies for overprescribing and overselling. But that's not the issue today. The issue today is the cartels working with China, killing Americans. So the marijuana thing is an absolute joke right now, in my opinion, because the crisis we have with the deaths from fentanyl is off the charts. So I wish they would focus on the priorities. They're not very good at focusing on priorities.
2,000,
by the way.
To almost 2,000 Americans a week. David Patterson, governor, I mean, the total amount of black people shot by white policemen last year by accident or whatever was only 15.
Unarmed, right.
But 2,000 young people are dying a week. Why isn't there outcry?
Well,
there should be outcry.
The problem that we have right now is, as the special agent said, the sources aren't even just criminal entities anymore. It's many of them Chinese. And this is part of the multifaceted warfare that they are conducting against the United States right now, buying up the chairs and seats at universities so nobody can speak out against them, creating all kinds of problems. But he's describing the real problem. And drugs really almost destroyed a generation in the 1960s, and they're just about to do it again.
Yeah, and the other side of the story, I know Derek will agree with me, is all these shootings that are up and all this violence that's going on, most are drug-related.
Right.
It's gangs fighting 100%. For territory.
Guns, gangs, drugs, all one problem, all Sinaloa and Jalisco cartel trying to get their territory established throughout our major cities. And they're basically being able to operate with impunity right now because the federal government, and not just under this administration, but for many years, going back when I was a new agent, this issue hasn't been properly addressed because people don't understand it. Going back to the other comment that was made, I wonder if you guys realize that right now the Chinese are providing the main financial services to the Mexican cartels to move all their money.
You said that before.
Yep.
No, but the thing is we can't even follow the money like we used to because they're using this bank-to-bank transfer in China and they're moving consumer goods around the world. And the business guys in America are using these kids, these Chinese students, to pick up the money for the brokers in Mexico.
Have we got problems?
It's right.
We got problems.
You got overdose deaths are up in 48 out of the 50 states, yet if you listen to Biden, he says that white supremacy is the greatest threat now facing our democracy.
Oh my
it's just
God,
such a and you got Merrick Garland, the attorney general, suing Georgia over their voting laws, the voter integrity laws.
Listen,
we've got 93,000 people that
died. It's a problem. Chinese supremacy is the problem that will destroy the country.
I agree with you. Well, DEA, Derek, Max Maltz.
Maltz,
thank you so much
sir.
For everything you've done for our country and continue to speak out and do for our country. God bless you and God bless America.
As a native New Yorker, you guys ever need anything, you call me. I'll be available to help you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Great, Derek. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Let's take a break. And who are we coming up with, Lydia?
Well, we have Katie Merrifield, And she is the vice president for British Columbia at Wellington Advocacy. And she's going to be talking to us about everything going on in Canada regarding these mass graves, the bodies of Indigenous children that were found. There's also dozens of churches that have been vandalized in Canada as well. So we'll be right back with Katie.
Talk Radio 77.
Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Show. I'm Lydia Serrani here with John Katzmatidis, Governor David Patterson, former FBI in charge of New York. George, I never say your name right correctly.
You said it perfect last time.
Venizelos?
Perfect.
Venizelos.
Like Venizelos coffee.
Yes, yes. And Governor David Patterson, today is a somber anniversary, the 25th anniversary of the TWA Flight 800. And you said you had an interesting story to tell us.
Yes. July 16th, 1996, Flight 800 goes down. It goes down early in the evening. And most people felt it was a terrorist attack. And at the time, on WABC, the Yankees were playing the Boston Red Sox. And, of course, they were bitter rivals. Well, the WABC team pulled the plug on that game, and Curtis Sliwa, who was the one that suggested it, went on the air, and I believe he went on the air with another WABC talk radio host. It could have been Steve Malzberg or John Batchelor or someone, and they talked and took phone calls for the rest of the evening, and there was a lot. You know, the sports fans called up screaming, but they had the option of turning the television on to watch the game, and I think over the next few days, it was kind of a controversy around the city, but the WABC decision was supported because it was such a tragic catastrophe.
Breaking news, WABC.
Sorry to interrupt you, Governor. We have some breaking news. A federal judge today ordered the Biden administration to stop all applications for the DACA program. That's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, after a coalition of states sued and claimed that the Obama-era program was illegal. If you recall, DACA was established under the Obama administration in 2012 and granted protection from deportation to illegal immigrants who came to the country as children. Approximately 800,000 are estimated to have been granted protection under the program, and hundreds of thousands more are deemed illegal. Again, a federal judge orders the Biden administration to end new DACA applications amid a legal battle.
Wow.
So that's some breaking news there.
Okay. I have an update. The judge has been taken into custody and banned from Facebook.
Let's go to our next guest.
We have Katie Merrifield on the line with us. She's the vice president for British Columbia at Wellington Advocacy. Welcome, Ms. Merrifield.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Katie, can you give us some background on what's going on in Canada? We're hearing these reports of hundreds of bodies being found of Indigenous children, and as a result, there have been 45 acts of arson and vandalism on churches throughout Canada, specifically in Calgary. Tell us what's happening.
So basically, since about May, more than 1,300 suspected graves have been uncovered near the site of former Indian residential schools across this country, notably about 557 in my home province of British Columbia, 751 in Saskatchewan, and we do anticipate more to come at all the former sites of these schools. Just to give listeners a bit of a primer on what these residential schools are, these were large-scale boarding schools designed specifically to remove and isolate Indigenous children from their families and their cultural identity to basically, quote-unquote, get rid of the Indian problem. They were in place from the late 1800s to about the 1970s, although some were running as late as the early 1990s. You know, we have heard fairly horrifying tales of neglect, sexual and physical abuse stemming from these schools, as well as allegations of students disappearing or dying mysteriously. And so in May, with the first discovery of these uncovered graves, this has really been the clearest illustration of what has actually always been relatively well known among our country's Indigenous people, which is these residential schools spent nearly a century overseeing shockingly high rates of death among their students, with the bodies of these dead children routinely withheld from their families and their homes. And what we've seen as a result of these discoveries is a very significant countrywide reaction here. Shock, horror, shame, and unfortunately, a rash of anti-Canada sentiment and violence against Christian places of worship.
Right, and we're seeing a lot of these churches now being vandalized, victims of mm-hmm. arson, burning to the ground. Do we know mm-hmm. who is behind these attacks, and where are they primarily happening?
Yeah, so let me start by saying, like, an attack on a person's faith or symbol of a person's faith is the same across all lines and all beliefs. We've seen more than 20 Christian churches across the country vandalized, severely damaged, or burned to the ground in recent weeks. You're seeing a lot in Alberta, a lot in British Columbia. In fact, there was 10 attacks of vandalism in the province of Alberta on Canada Day alone, which was only 2 weeks ago. So it's really tragic. You're seeing hundreds of Christian believers seeing their houses of worship destroyed, their faith insulted by targeted acts of violence. And I have to say, like, if 10 or 12 holy places from any other major religion had been attacked, especially in such a tight time frame, I have to imagine the reaction from our government and the media would have been significantly stronger. You know, if these were mosques, synagogues, gurdwaras, I think that there would be visits to the sites, condemnations of hate crimes, promises that were better than this. And I personally don't think that we've seen a strong enough reaction to these criminal acts. In terms of who's responsible, what's interesting is that the loudest and the strongest condemnation of these attacks has actually come from Indigenous people themselves, which I think is a really testament to their resilience and their kindness, especially given what's been uncovered over the past few months. In fact, Murray Sinclair, he's a First Nations leader who led the committee on Canada's Truth and Reconciliation pathway, he heavily condemned the burning of churches publicly, really noting that these senseless acts of violence are absolutely not the path forward to true reconciliation.
And the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops said that the Pope Francis will be meeting separately at the Vatican with Canada's three biggest Indigenous groups in December. He's still recovering from mm-hmm. surgery. Hopefully he can help bring some sort of solace, some sort of, do we want an apology from the Catholic Church? Because, I mean, it was horrific what happened to these yes. children.
It really was. And, I'm a communications professional. I do think that the Catholic Church is doing themselves a bit of a disservice by not apologizing for their role in residential schools. Like, every new discovery of graves, and there will be a significant number of more discoveries, that's just going to be another opportunity to bring up the church's role and another demand for accountability. So, apologize and let's all heal together.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Katie Merrifield. Again, she is the Vice President for British Columbia at Wellington Advocacy, and you're serving as a communications director. Thank you so much. And hopefully more mainstream media outlets will be covering this story because it's an extremely important one.
Well, thank God it's Friday. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. This is John Katsimatidis, Lydia Serrani, Governor David Patterson, George Venizelos. Have a great weekend, guys, and God bless all of you, and God bless America.